नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भगवद् गीता एज इट इज ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 13, Text 22. Purushaḥ prakṛtistho hi bhunkte prakṛtijān gunān kāraṇaṁ guṇasaṅgosya Sadasadyoni Janmasu. Translation: The living entity and material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil amongst various species. Purport: This verse is very important. This verse is very important for an understanding of how the living entities transmigrate from one body to another. It is explained in the second chapter that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another just as one changes dress. This change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is put into such undesirable circumstances. Under the influence of material desire, the entity is born sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a beast, as a bird, as a worm, as an aquatic, as a saintly man, as a bug. This is going on. And in all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of his circumstances, yet he is under the influence of material nature. How he is put into such different bodies is explained here. It is due to association with the different modes of nature. One has to rise, therefore, above the three material modes and become situated in the transcendental position. That is called Krishna consciousness. Unless one is situated in Krishna consciousness, his material consciousness will oblige him to transfer from one body to another because he has material desire since time immemorial. But he has to change that conception. That change can be effected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The best example is here. Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna. The living entity, if he submits to this hearing process, will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature, and gradually and proportionately as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. In a Vedic mantra it is said that as he becomes learned in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he proportionately relishes his eternal blissful life. This is the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, spoken by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Authority. He is describing in this verse how the living being, that means you and me and every living being, whether in the body of a beast or a bug, is situated within material nature. We don't belong in material nature, but we are situated in material nature, and we are interacting with the three modes of material nature, which are described in some detail in Bhagavad Gita. The mode of goodness, sattva guna, the mode of passion, rajo guna, and the mode of ignorance, tamo guna. And according to our association with those modes of nature, we get different bodies, this human form of life that determines our future for many future lives. As Krishna will state in the 15th chapter, Urdhanga chanti satvastho rajo tishtant madhe tishtanti rajasaha jaghanya guna vritisto adhoga chanti tamasa. Those who are in sattva gun, they go up. Those who are in rajoguna, they stay in the middle. And those who are in tamaguna, they go down to horrible, abominable species. And we also learn from many other verses of Bhagavad Gita that those who transcend the modes of material nature, they go out of this material existence altogether. So as long as we are within material existence, then we get different kinds of bodies depending on our consciousness, our desires, and our activities. And it all depends on what we do and think in this human life. In other forms of life, we are not creating karmic reactions. We're simply living them out. But in the human form of life, there is extra intelligence, discrimination as to what is right and wrong, to what should be done and what should not be done. And if we use that intelligence properly, then we are elevated. If we misuse that intelligence, then we are degraded. Sadasad yoni janmasu. We take birth in good and not good species of life. These terms are used here. Sat, asat. These words, sat and asat, they are used repeatedly in Bhagavad Gita. The very simplest meaning of them is good and bad. The first use of these words in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses to distinguish sat, that which is eternal, from asat, that which is temporary. And in this context, it is used to mean good and bad in a very general way. This is the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, spoken by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Authority. He is describing in this verse how the living being, that means you and me and every living being, whether in the body of a beast or a bug, is situated within material nature. We don't belong in material nature, but we are situated in material nature, and we are interacting with the three modes of material nature, which are described in some detail in Bhagavad Gita: the mode of goodness, sattva guna; the mode of passion, rajo guna; and the mode of ignorance, tamo guna. And according to our association with those modes of nature, we get different bodies. This human form of life that determines our future for many future lives, as Krishna will state in the 15th chapter. Urdhanga chanti satvastho rajo tishtant madhe tishtanti rajasaha jaghanya guna vritisto adhoga chanti tamasa. Those who are in sattva gun, they go up. Those who are in rajoguna, they stay in the middle. And those who are in tamaguna, they go down to horrible, abominable species. And we also learn from many other verses of Bhagavad Gita that those who transcend the modes of material nature, they go out of this material existence altogether. So as long as we are within material existence, then we get different kinds of bodies depending on our consciousness, our desires, and our activities. And it all depends on what we do and think in this human life. In other forms of life, we are not creating karmic reactions. We're simply living them out. But in the human form of life, there is extra intelligence, discrimination as to what is right and wrong, to what should be done and what should not be done. And if we use that intelligence properly, then we are elevated. If we misuse that intelligence, then we are degraded. Sada sadyoni janmasu. We take birth in good and not good species of life. These terms are used here. Sat, asat. These words, sat and asat, they're used repeatedly in Bhagavad Gita. The very simplest meaning of them is good and bad. The first use of these words in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses to distinguish sat, that which is eternal, from asat, that which is temporary. And in this context, it is used to mean good and bad in a very general way, with the idea that a good birth might be considered one in which one has good health, well, first of all, in a human birth, or higher, is higher than human also. That means demigod body. One can be born in higher planets. So, good birth means to be born in a what is considered a good family, where there's good opportunity for material comfort. Generally speaking, we can say that birth in Germany is a better birth than birth in most countries in Africa. Generally speaking, because it's a very general term, but generally life here is more comfortable and at least at the present time more secure than in many countries in Africa. And at least at the time, at the present time, there's a good supply of food, which in many countries in Africa there may not be. So that's just some comparison, how it may be considered a better birth. Now, we're not talking about any Aryan racialistic theories here, as were propagated in the 1930s and 1940s here in Germany, but just some facts of the world, which is why people like to immigrate to Germany and not to Africa, generally speaking. We don't find their accused of people in Germany lining up to emigrate to Sierra Leone or Liberia or some country in Africa. So there are gradations. So a better birth is one in a good family and in a good country also. But it's all relative. In this material world, it's all relative. Good, and even within Germany, you could be born in a very rich family or a much poorer family. And other factors are if one can be born with a very good-looking and healthy body, or with a body that is congenitally deformed or ugly like this. Then someone may have very good intelligence, someone may be a Dummkopf. I learned a few German words here and there. All the good words. Janmaishvarya should, and someone may be very wealthy, learned, intelligent. But these are all good and bad. They are largely relative terms within this material world because it can be mixed also. Just like one of the most famous intellectuals in the world at the present time, or intelligent people, is Stephen Hawking, scientist of Cambridge University in England,
whose physical condition is very bad, and actually his mental condition is too, but at least he's famous as being a great scientist. And one of the reasons he's famous is because he writes books, which especially one of them became a bestseller, The Brief History of Time. I was saying his mental condition is not very good. You may wonder why I said that. He's known, he's famous for being very intelligent, but we don't at all agree with his theories. His rebuttal to the intelligent design concept is that, well, the very fact that we're here shows that we're here. It's called the anthropic principle. The very fact that intelligent design, they argue that there are all these constants, there are about 20 scientific constants, which have to be exactly correct down to the thousandth decimal point for the universe to exist as we see it exists, which means it's practically impossible by chance. That's the claim of intelligent design. But Stephen Hawking says, well, the fact that we're here shows that we're here. And anyway, it must have happened because we're here. So that's called science in the 21st century. So it can be mixed also. So these are very general terms. Sadasadhyoni janmasu. Basically, everything in the material world is asat, means not proper. It's, we don't belong here. Purusha prakriti stohi. Purusha prakriti stohi. Certainly with the Purusha, the living being is in material nature, but asango hi ayam Purusha. Actually, the real situation of the living being is not to be in this material nature at all. The whole material nature is asat. That's established at the beginning of Gita. Everything in this world is temporary. And there cannot be any real happiness or solace or shelter in a situation which is temporary. However nice it may seem to be, whatever is temporary cannot properly satisfy us. So someone may be born in a very wealthy family, a well-to-do nation with good looks and good intelligence and all these things, but this will come to an end. And not only will it come to an end, but even while in that situation, many people in that situation don't feel at all satisfied. As we see in Germany, for instance. I don't know exactly about Germany because I'm only visiting here, but I can imagine that many people are very discontent. And there's, I know, for instance, in America that there's tremendous discontent. That even though people have all facilities for what it might be considered comfortable living, but nevertheless, people, they're so discontent that they take intoxication to try to alter their mental state because they're not satisfied in their present state. And many people, they during the course, I believe some figure I saw, 70% of people in America at some point in their life seek psychiatric treatment. That means it's not a nation of happy people. So even though one may have all facilities for material enjoyment, it doesn't bring happiness. And even if we think we're happy, everything is temporary. We may struggle to build a business and get money and build our dream house, but it's all temporary. It will all come to an end. And then we have to go to another situation and struggle again. So here when Krishna speaks of sadasat, good and bad. It's all relative. In this material world, good and bad, it's all relative. As many people point out, you don't have to read Bhagavad Gita to understand this. In this material world, everything is relative. But what we need Bhagavad Gita for is to understand that beyond the relative situation, there is an absolute situation. There is a situation where everything is good always. And that is the situation that we all aspire for. Everyone wants to be happy. It's axiomatic, isn't it? Everyone wants to be happy. Anyone not want to be happy? And if you say, I don't want to be happy, that means you're indirectly you're saying, I will be happy by not being happy. So you can't avoid it. I don't want to be happy. Someone come and kick me in the head. You'll be happy if I kick you in the head? I want you to kick me in the head. And then, that means you desire that. We all have desire. We all have desire. And we have the feeling that when those desires are fulfilled, then I'll be happy. But in this material world, a desire leads to frustration. This is an important teaching of Bhagavad Gita, that desire is our enemy, Krishna says. He says that desire is our enemy. Because Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha. Here it's stated that by association with the modes of nature one gets different bodies. Earlier in Gita, Krishna said, Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha. Sangat Sanjayate Kama, Kama Kodho Bijayate. Due to desire, we gravitate toward different modes of nature. Then from karma, desire comes krodha, anger. And krodha in this context means not just anger where you shout and scream and yell, but that can also mean inner anger, frustration. We all know frustration. We desire something, we don't get it, we feel frustrated. We desire something, we get it, and still we're frustrated. Because the happiness that we thought that we would get from getting it, we don't feel that happiness. And therefore we desire something else, and something else, and something else, and something else. And it goes on and on and on. It's like a dog chasing his tail. He can never catch it. Round and round in circles. So, this material desire is our enemy, and therefore the Buddha taught that desire is the cause of suffering. What he taught, that's the same as Bhagavad Gita teaching. Just he left out Krishna, that's all. That this material situation is one of suffering. Suffering is caused by desire. So this is correct. But Buddha taught that, therefore we should stop all desire. But Krishna teaches that we cannot stop desire, because desire is the very nature of our very being. As we are Atma, we are conscious living beings, and the nature of the Atma is to consciousness is concomitant with desire. So, what does that mean? That we're doomed to suffer forever? No, Krishna teaches that we have to purify our desire. We desire happiness. It is not wrong to desire happiness. It is natural to desire happiness. We cannot not desire happiness. Therefore, we see that everything that every living being does at every moment is for the sake of procuring happiness and avoiding distress. But still, no one in this world finds happiness. But there is a situation of happiness. That is the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, that we are eternal living beings and we have a situation of happiness, but it's beyond this situation of getting one body after another, after another, after another, after another, coming to a situation where there is no rebirth, coming to a situation where our desire is in accord with the atmosphere in which we are in. Purusha Prakriti, Stohi Prakriti, what is that? Purusha Prakriti, Stohi. I have to look at it. Pungte Prakriti Janguna. Yeah. Because we're trying to enjoy this material nature born of three modes, therefore we have to suffer under the three modes. But when the Purusha, the living being, is in that nature which is in accord with his nature, then he's satisfied. This material nature, in this material world, everything is asat achit nirananda. It is temporary. It is devoid of actual knowledge of our constitutional position, and it is devoid of actual happiness. So we are, as Atma, we belong in the Satchit Ananda situation. We desire full happiness, full knowledge, full bliss. But the very nature of this material world is, there is a little shadow of happiness. But because we're addicted to happiness, we chase after it. We don't know any happiness other than drinking beer, eating sausages, or maybe a little more advanced, or listening to some music. Well, there's very little tamasic music. What is called music nowadays is very tamasic. Otherwise, in Germany and Austria, so many great composers, higher class of music. There's a little happiness there, but it's just very, very little. But it's not pure happiness or real happiness. So this is the situation in the material world where there's sat, chit, ananda. It's not sat, it's not chit, it's not ananda. It's asat, achit, nirananda. But there's a little feeling of Satchidananda. Just like we are not in an eternal position. It's obvious, isn't it? Should be obvious. We all have to die. But we feel as if we will live. Do you need German translation? Who just came?
Oh, no, I'm English.
Yeah, okay, you're English. Okay. So by the power of Maya, illusion, we feel as if we're eternal. We don't think, I'm going to die. We have the feeling that, yes, life will go on, this is my house, I live here. We feel, by Maya, illusion, we feel as if I am eternal. But it's illusory. And we think we know what's going on. Everyone has a way of thinking. What's that called in German? Weltanschauung, something like that. Yeah. So a world view, but not that everyone's a big philosopher, but even if we don't have a philosophy, if you ask someone, well, why are you going to work? Well, I have to work hard to get money and look after my family and enjoy life. So it's not that everyone formulates a Weltanschauung, excuse me for not pronouncing it properly, but everyone has one, because as humans, we do have consciousness more developed than animals. Animals, they don't have any worldview, but the human has. And we need something to justify our existence. By our worldview, we solidify our Maya of thinking, I am this body. I'm German. I live in Leipzig, and I do this work, and this is me. We put around us a set of postulates. In Sanskrit, that's called upadhi. we give ourselves some designations by which we consider ourselves to be this, and we consider ourselves to be the mind. So there's a feeling like we know what is going on. And there is a feeling of happiness. It's not really happiness, but we feel some happiness. When you drink coffee, there's a little sensation, and then a little ding, and we feel, ah, that's good, that's better. So there is a, we don't drink coffee, I'm just giving it as an example. So there is a feeling of Satchidananda, but it is just a perverse reflection of actual eternity, actual existence and knowledge, and actual happiness. But because it's not full and complete, and because it's temporary, therefore we suffer. Even if we have a very good situation. Actually, even birth in Germany is not a very good situation. Birth in the higher planets. There are higher planets. We can get born and live a very long life with very healthy bodies. But even there is anxiety, and it's temporary. So, Krishna teaches us that desire is our enemy, material desire, but it's not that we should stop desiring, we should purify our desire. Purify our desire means to change our consciousness. In this material world, our consciousness is that of wanting to enjoy material nature. These words are used here. Purusha, Prakriti. Purusha means, in this context, Purusha means the living being, the enjoyer. And Prakriti means material nature. So we have the consciousness that we want to enjoy. Because we have this consciousness that we want to enjoy this material world, therefore we are suffering within it. It's a paradox, isn't it? Because we want to enjoy, therefore we suffer. That sounds cruel, doesn't it? Isn't that cruel? The more you want to enjoy, the more you suffer. What is the cause of that? Philosophers have been discussing for generations. I was taught that the cause of this is because, when I was a child, I was taught that the cause of all this suffering is because way, 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 way back, before Noah, one of our forefathers, well, our forefather, ate an apple. That's what I was told. I didn't find it a very satisfying explanation. His name was Adam. He ate an apple, and that's why we're suffering. But here in Bhagavad Gita, in this very chapter, and just before this, Krishna gives a much more acceptable explanation, acceptable to any intelligent person, that, what is it now? Don't give lecture after eating. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktritve hetu ruchyate. Now you'll find that, this says that the happiness and the distress that we perceive is caused by ourselves. The two words that he used here. We see here in this verse, Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunte Prakriti Jahangunan. The living being in material, situated in material nature, enjoys bhunkte. Bhunkte means, literally means to swallow, to consume is the right word. The modes which are born from material nature. So, bhoktritve, because he is the bhokta, because he is in the mood of a consumer. I am here and everything else is meant for me. because of this attitude, therefore he experiences happiness and distress. In other words, he himself, by his own attitude, is the cause of he, we, whichever way you want to say it. We are the cause of our own happiness and distress. And we get different kinds of bodies, and different kinds of bodies means somebody is more suited for material enjoyment, somebody is basically meant for suffering. If we perform very sinful activities, then by the laws of nature, for every action there is a reaction, then we get a body suited to that. But even if we get a body, a situation suitable for enjoyment, we get born in a wealthy country, in a wealthy family with a healthy body. When we say healthy body, means anyway it has to die at some point in time, but relatively healthy. We get all facilities for material enjoyment. Still we're not happy, because the enjoyment in this world anyway, it's just a perverse reflection of actual enjoyment. It's all an illusory enjoyment. It's like trying to enjoy a beautiful woman in a painting, or seeing a glass of beer on TV and trying to enjoy. It's just the impression is there, but you can't enjoy it, because there's no actual connection between ourself and that. It's just an impression. So in the same way, we have no actual connection with this material nature. So purified consciousness, by which we can, when we come to purified consciousness, then we can come to the actual situation of Satchidananda. We can get free from birth and death. Why do we take birth after birth after birth? Why? Because we're attached to enjoying this world. We enjoy this world, and so we take bodies, body after body, to enjoy it. Even if we take the body of, say, a worm, it means we have some kind of desire to enjoy in that situation. In our present body, human body, we can't imagine how a worm could have any enjoyment. But they enjoy, they also have sex, and they think that's enjoyable. And they also eat, and they think that's very enjoyable. So, because of these desires to enjoy this world, we get born again and again. We have to purify our consciousness from the consciousness of wanting to be an enjoyer to understand what is our constitutional position. And this Krishna teaches here in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna wanted to enjoy this world, living peacefully with his relatives, and Krishna told him, no, you got it wrong. You got the wrong formula there, Arjuna. So, Krishna gives us that knowledge of our actual situation, by understanding which we can get freed from the desire to enjoy this world, that very desire which we find desirable, we find relishable. Krishna, he explains that that desire is our enemy, because it causes us to be born again and again and again. But what is that purified desire by which we get freed from birth and death? And we can go to spiritual existence. Spiritual existence means Satchidananda, where there's no birth, no death, there's eternity, where there's full and complete happiness. And there's complete knowledge of who we are and what we're supposed to do. So what is that knowledge? Well, that knowledge is given here in Bhagavad Gita. And if we explain it philosophically, it's quite acceptable on a philosophical level. When we come to the details, then it may be difficult to accept. On the philosophical level, there is a supreme being. Not exactly the God who we're told about if we're raised in a Christian family. Not exactly that idea of a jealous God who throws everyone in hell. But there is a supreme being, and we are subordinate to him. And if we dovetail our desires with his, then we become situated in his service. Then we become free from contaminated desires. We are constitutionally very tiny living beings. We are not independent. We are dependent. Means we are controlled. We cannot, this cycle of birth and death, we cannot escape by our own endeavor. That means we are under a higher control. So if we submit to the higher controller, then we become situated in our happy position. We become free from birth and death. That is pure desire. When we stop trying to exploit this material nature, which means inflicting suffering on others, then we can become released from it. But that desire, instead of desire to enjoy this material world, we simply desire to serve Krishna, who is the supreme being. Then who is Krishna? Then we go beyond philosophy. Then that may be more difficult to understand, because this beyond understanding. Krishna is a cowherd boy. Why should he be a cowherd boy? Why should God be a cowherd boy? And the answer is, he likes to be. He plays a flute. He has gopis, cowherd girlfriends. He likes to eat butter. This is Krishna. The Supreme is the Supreme Person. And he has his Supreme Personality. He does certain things. Why does he? Because he likes to do. Everyone has their own likes and dislikes. So Krishna, he likes cows. In the Western world, people, they like dogs more. We saw. As opposite is, what is that? Hund Salon. They have hairdressers for dogs. Hunde Salon. They give much importance to dogs, but Krishna gives much importance to cows. Krishna likes cows. Krishna likes to play his flute. Why should he be? He likes to dress in a yellow dhoti. Why? He likes. He is God. He does as he likes. He is the center. He is the one independent controller who can do as he likes. We are not in that situation. Our desire to do as we like gets us in a lot of trouble. 8,400,000 kinds of trouble. We get it. 8,400,000 kinds of trouble. And within each kind of trouble, there's a whole matrix of problems. So, problem from beginning to end. But with Krishna, there's no problem. Krishna is the supreme transcendental autocrat. Fortunately for us, he's nice. He's got better things to do than just looking down angrily and throwing people into hell. He is a very sweet person. He doesn't want us to be in this material nature. Therefore, he comes to this material world and teaches us Bhagavad Gita so that we can understand, instead of trying to understand everything by our own teeny brains, he explains everything, why we're suffering in this material world, how we can come out. And he displays his transcendental pastimes, which are of the nature of pure bliss. And he calls us back. He plays his flute By playing his flute, he calls us to come to him. So Krishna explains here in Bhagavad Gita how we are suffering in this world, why we are suffering in this world, and how we can come out of this situation. People don't understand. Krishna is giving this knowledge. We should try to understand this. If we really want our highest benefit, what benefit we can get from anything in this world, that will all be temporary and limited by time. But in Krishna consciousness, whatever little we do, that is for our eternal benefit. In this material world, whatever great things we do, even great things, that will all be finished. Even if one becomes a very famous, very wealthy, great conqueror of nations, at the time of death, it's all finished. At latest at the time of death. But in Krishna consciousness, because it's on the spiritual platform, it's on the sat platform, it's on the eternal platform, it's on the platform of all goodness, then even any little thing we do, that is for our eternal benefit. If we offer a flower to Krishna, that's a very small thing. That's not such a very big thing. We offer a flower, it may seem not like a very big thing. If we offer a flower to Krishna, that won't get reported in the newspaper tomorrow. Mukunda Madhava Das offered one rose to Krishna. It won't come in the newspaper. Because it's a very small thing. If someone does something big, like, what can you do big? Well, many people do bad things just to get in the newspaper. We're told that this person who shot John Lennon dead did so because he wanted to get famous. There's one way to get famous is to kill someone else who's famous. Or kill someone who is famous, then you become famous. There's one way of doing it. Not recommended. Anyway, it's not recommended to try to be famous, and even if you want to be famous, it's not recommended to do so by killing anyone. But I'm just using this as an example that offering a flower to Krishna may seem to be a very insignificant thing to do. But according to Krishna, this is something very important, because Krishna says, here in Bhagavad Gita, patram pushpam phalam tauyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti upahritam ashnami prayatatmana. Krishna says that if one offers me with bhakti, with pure love, following all the rules and regulations, that's also there in the verse, that's how the acharyas explain it, even something as simple as leaf, flower, fruit or water, I will accept. So that's much more important thing that we can do in our life, to make some offering of love to Krishna. You should make your life successful. Work hard, get a good degree, get a good job. Work hard all your life, and then as a result of it all, when you die, you can have a 3-inch column in the newspaper. So-and-so has died. That means your life was successful. But it's all useless. But if we offer a flower to Krishna, Krishna is pleased. And if Krishna is pleased, that is to our eternal credit. And Krishna will never forget. So activities in Krishna consciousness, they are activities on the platform of sat, of eternal well-being, on the platform of the soul. This is what Krishna teaches us here. In this verse, he's teaching how we are entangled in this material world. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, he teaches us, well, throughout Bhagavad Gita, he teaches us to become disentangled, and he teaches us how to do so. By changing the consciousness from the material consciousness of wanting to enjoy this world to the spiritual consciousness of simply wanting to please Krishna. And Krishna can be pleased very easily. by chanting his names, by offering him leaf, flower, fruit or water. But that should be done with pure intention. Not that we should ask Krishna for some situation to enjoy this world, but simply, Krishna, may you be satisfied by this offering. So those are a few words about how we are caught in this material world, how we should come out of it, how we can come out of it by the grace of Krishna. Are there any questions about this, please? Get the books, all varieties, and the CD.
How to learn the way of acting, as it said, there's good and bad action, and how to, because sometimes life is complex, it's difficult to determine how to do everything properly.
Very appropriate question. How can we learn what to do, what is proper and what is not, because life is very complex? Yeah, well, that's a very appropriate question. And that, on the basis of that question, the whole Bhagavad Gita unfolded. Because Arjuna was convinced to avoid the fight, to not take part in the fighting that was about to take place. But Krishna convinced Arjuna that although Arjuna was convinced that it was right for him not to fight, Krishna convinced Arjuna that it was wrong for him not to fight and it was right for him to fight. And there are many instances throughout. I mean, what makes Mahabharata, one of the main factors in making Mahabharata such an interesting story or collection of stories, or amalgam of stories, is that, it shows that right action gives certain results and wrong action gives certain results, and that it's not always easy to distinguish what is right and what is wrong. And often what seems right may seem to be wrong and vice versa. And even at the end of all of it, where it seemed that Duryodhana and company were wrong, that was the understood point, and the Pandavas were right. And at the end, it showed Duryodhana in heaven and the Pandavas in hell. That was just some illusory show to test Yudhishthira some more. And that was a test for him also. That was his final test, because are you going now, at the end of it all, are you going to go to heaven with the Duryodhana and company? Or they said, well, if my family's in hell, then I'll go to hell. I'll stay with them. And that was his final test. And he was showing, actually, they're not in hell at all. But they're full of paradoxes like this, because life in this world is full of paradoxes. But the way to cut through all of this is to understand. See, in the Vedic understanding, and this was Arjuna's principle, everything rests on dharma. Dharma is a very broad term, but in this context, I'm stating it to mean that what should be done and what should not be done. But in the material situation, there's always some contradiction. And that's what Arjuna found himself in, that dharma sankat, it's called. Some contradictory situation, because Arjuna, he should have taken part in the fighting, because the Duryodhana had unfairly usurped the throne from Yudhishthira. Duryodhana had done all kinds of abominations against Yudhishthira. And therefore it was right for Arjuna to fight. But on the other hand, how could he fight? Arjuna thought, how can I fight against Bhishma, who's circumstantially on the other side, who's our grandfather and who's nourished us and protected us all our life, And Drona, our guru, who taught us how to use weapons. So how can I fight them? So this Stephen Covey, he talks about a win-win. You have to make a win-win situation. But for Arjuna, he saw it was a lose-lose situation. Whatever he does, he can't be satisfied. If he fights, then he has to fight against his gurus. If he doesn't fight, then he lets down his brothers. So there's no win-win. So Krishna directs us to what? To Krishna. How to get above this situation, or how to always do the right thing. In this material world, it's not possible to always do everything right. Sarva-rambahi-dosheena. In every endeavor, there is some fault. That is the nature of this material world. But if we act for the satisfaction of Krishna, then we're always in the right situation. Then we have to learn what satisfies Krishna. Well, Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport that unless one is situated in Krishna consciousness, his material consciousness will oblige him to transfer from one body to another because he has material desire since time immemorial. But he has to change that conception. That change can be affected only by hearing from authoritative sources. So we have to learn from authorities. Then who are authoritative sources? The best example is here, Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna. So we have to hear from Krishna and from representatives of Krishna who can teach us what to do. And it's often not easy. Just like for Arjuna, it wasn't easy to come out of material consciousness. It's not going to be very easy. And even to remain in Krishna in material consciousness means it's not easy. To come out of it is not easy. It seems easy just to follow our material desires, but we get led into all kinds of ever-entangling situations. So it may seem difficult to practice Krishna consciousness, but that leads us out of all difficulties, ultimately. Yeah. So, Hare Krishna. Anything else?
He's asking if he should follow his unconscious feelings.
Subliminal, subconscious ideas, Freudian ideas.
In terms of if he should follow more, not so much his singing, but more his feeling, kind of his intuition or inner calling. Or
should we follow our intuition? Very dangerous. Because as long as our consciousness is not purified, our intuition is going to be mixed with material desires. In material consciousness, our intuition works in a way that makes us think that we know what we're doing for our best interest. But here we are recommended to be trained to learn what is our own real self-interest. As long as we don't clearly understand that I am an eternal spiritual being, an eternal servant of Krishna, then our intuition will guide us in ways that intuition, which is sparked by Maya, the illusory energy of Krishna, will guide us in the wrong way, even though we may think it's the right way. But that's Maya, that's illusion. Therefore, there is Shastra, which means rules of how to live in this world so that we can come out of this world. which gives us knowledge of who we are and how we should act. Otherwise, if we act according to our intuition, then that is described in Bhagavad Gita, that what happens? That yashastra vidhimutricha vartate kama karata nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukam naparamgati. People who act according to what they think is right, neglecting the instructions of Krishna given in Shastra, then they cannot attain perfection, they cannot attain happiness, and they cannot attain the highest destination. So this intuition is very dangerous. Just to give an example, an extreme example, Hitler, he was inspired within his heart, and he wrote one book called Mein Kampf, which was very influential. Where did he get all those ideas from? Like, now, you may say, well, I'm not bad like that, but yeah, it's he was an exceptionally bad person. But we're also not completely pure. So our desires may mislead us. That's why it's better to hear from and associate with saintly persons, people of purified, of completely purified consciousness. Otherwise our mind may mislead us. So we have to be very careful of intuition. This subliminal desires, this was all, this Freud and Jung, they made much investigation into this, or speculation about it. And, well, Freud, his analysis is that everyone in this world is highly motivated, either consciously or subliminally, by sexual desires. And that actually, how do you say, synchronizes with or is in tandem with the Vedic understanding. The only thing is, the big difference is that Freud says that one should not attempt to suppress such desires, whereas the Vedic understanding is that these desires, they entangle us in this material world, and therefore we should purify those desires. So we should, it's the Vedic system is that we should be guided by persons of purified consciousness, persons who have spiritual knowledge, persons who know what is the goal of life and how to attain it, persons who have controlled their mind and senses. It's better to be guided by them, by such persons, than to follow the dictates of our own consciousness, which, known or unknown to us, is mixed with material desires. And therefore it can be very dangerous to listen to that. Romantic as it may seem to follow our own inner voice, it may seem very spiritual, but be careful. The Vedic process, it all hinges on finding the right guidance. As the saying goes, someone who has himself, someone who makes himself his own guru has a fool as a disciple. Someone who makes himself his own guru has a fool as a disciple. One can actually become a disciple when he admits to himself that I am a fool, then he can go to get a guru. But who wants to admit they're a fool? But unless we admit that we're a fool, then we can't begin to progress. We can't begin to get actual knowledge, because a fool means someone who's in ignorance. And guru means one who teaches. So we have to admit that we're in ignorance, and then we can approach a guru. But if we think, well, I already know a lot, so then we can't be guided, we can't be helped. Just like, for instance, it's very difficult to treat someone with a psychiatric disorder unless they first of all admit that they have a problem. You can't counsel or guide someone and try to help them come out of their problem unless they, first of all, they have to admit that they have a problem. Otherwise, if they think that, well, everything's okay, I don't have any problem, then you can't help them.
There was a question, so where he wants to go to, where this intuition is coming from.
Yes, where does intuition come from? That Krishna, actually this 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in this 13th chapter in particular, there is discussion of Paramatma. Atma means the soul. You, me, every living being, we are all Atma. And Paramatma means the Supreme Being, especially that form of the Supreme Being who accompanies every living being. And according to the consciousness that we have inherited, exactly this discussion of this, these verses here, these two verses, which the verse before this, these two verses go together. Yeah, actually I'll read the verse before this. If you listen, please listen very carefully. Karya karana kartritve hetu prakriti ruchate purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktritve hetu ruchate. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. Purushav prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sadasadi yoni janmasu. The living entity and material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature, thus he meets with good and evil among various species. In the next verse, upajashtanumanta cha bharta bhukta maheshvaraha paramatmeti chapyukto dehesmin purushav paraha. Now this describes the Paramatma. Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Supersoul. So the Supersoul within our heart gives us inspiration. Just like a child is born. The child is born and the child seeks the breast of the mother. Why? How? Inspired by Paramatma. So, we feel an inspiration from within our heart. That inspiration comes from the Paramatma, who is Upadrashtanumanta. He oversees our whole existence, not only in this life, but in previous lives. And he knows what our deep desires are. And accordingly gives us inspiration. But that may be in accordance with our desires and not necessarily in accordance with our best interest. This inspiration, that's a very interesting point. It's quite common, just like the Eureka experience. It's quite common that a scientist or a mathematician, they have some problem, they're trying to solve it, they're thinking, trying to work it out for weeks, for months, and then they just give up, and then they may be sitting in the bathtub, then all of a sudden, Eureka, the solution comes. So there was one scientist who'd been working for years on some problem, and he just couldn't get it, and then one day he described, I just He wasn't thinking about it, he was just stepping onto a bus, and boom, all of a sudden, he got it all. Mozart said that just in his mind, whole symphonies would come, and he'd just rush home and write them down. He didn't feel, it's not me, it's just something come. So there, that source of inspiration comes from outside us. That is Paramatma, that is God. It's coming from God. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's completely pure because it's coming from God, because He gives us inspiration according to our desire. So, even though we recognize it's coming from a higher source and therefore we rate it very highly, but unless we consciously submit our desire to Him, He will continue to inspire us in the way that we want to be inspired, which is not necessarily in our own real best interest. So we have to consciously submit our desires to Him, then we will get truly spiritual inspiration, which we see, for instance, in the poems and songs of great devotees who they pray to Krishna with such beautiful prayers of glorification. So Krishna inspires, for that inspiration is pure inspiration. Any other kind of inspiration we have to be very careful of. It's very popular nowadays, people, that you should just follow your inner voice. Dangerous, dangerous. As long as we have any desire to enjoy this material world, to follow our own inner voice means it's a very dangerous thing. In America, there are many people who say, I talk with Jesus. It's quite a common thing. I mean, not, you know, even like well-educated people, they actually think that they talk with Jesus and Jesus tells them what to do. George W. Bush was certain that he was inspired by Jesus when he ordered the invasion of Iraq. So be careful. There are many people who think, especially in America, the American Christian right wing, they think, well, geez, we have to bomb all these people. It's Jesus wants us to do it. They're quite convinced. And they're very serious about it. It's very dangerous. There are many people who think that Jesus wants us to eat meat and all kinds of things. They haven't very seriously studied the nature of who is God and what He wants of us. They just accept some belief and then they go along with it. And one set of people accept one belief and another set of people accept another belief and they're fighting with each other and they both believe they're inspired by God. They're both sure they're inspired by God. Kill the Pope. Why do you say that? God inspired me. Kill the Protestants. Why do you say that? God inspired me. Both think. Both sides think. I'd kill the Pope, that's out of date nowadays. But it used to be. Europe was, I mean, how many people died in Europe? Pro-Pope and anti-Pope fights. And both sides thought, well, it's what God wants. It's a forgotten enmity now. But it was a major factor in European history. Hundreds of thousands of people died on this non-issue. They all thought they were inspired. The voice from within is telling me. So be careful of the voice within. And be careful to get proper guidance also. That was the central to the Catholic versus Protestant enmity, was that one said one should follow the authority of the Pope and another said forget it. Just read the book and you have your direct connection to Jesus. That's like we have the Ritvik movement nowadays. It's very similar. Just read the book and you have your direct connection with Prabhupada. The Catholics, they say, well, we have to have the authority, but then we see the authority was maybe not so authoritative in giving us proper guidance. So we have to be, we need guidance. That's the point. We need guidance. We just can't, just by our feelings, try and understand God. But we have to be very careful to take proper guidance. When we say follow our intuition, that is resulting from many, many lifetimes of various material desires in gross and subtle form. So although we may have some general idea to do good, unless we have a specific knowledge of what is good, then we're not going to get clear guidance. Another thing, intuition based on, without having clear knowledge, it's going to be problematic. We need guidance. You don't know how to cook bread. Maybe you do, but I'm just taking it as an example. Okay. Here's some wheat flour, some water, some yeast, and an oven. Okay, now with intuition, you make it all into bread. Better to get taught how to do it. If you don't know, you may have some general idea. You mix wheat flour with water. But then you might think, well, the wheat flour is quite costly compared to water. So why don't we put just 10% wheat flour, 90% water? It'd be cheaper, but then you don't get bread. There are specific things you have to do to get the right results. So similarly, in spiritual life, there's this idea that spiritual life is all very vague and individualistic. But it's true that we are all individual spiritual living beings, but at the same time, there are certain formulae that if we follow them, we'll get the right result. And if we don't follow, we won't get the right result. Some very basic things, if we're addicted to meat eating and drinking beer, we can't make spiritual advancement. So those are very basic things. And then there are more specific things. There are things we should not do, like drinking beer and eating meat. There are things that we should do. Chanting Hare Krishna, the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This will purify the consciousness. So there's certain things we have to do. And by intuition, you might find it, but you're not so likely to find it, because there are millions of things you can do in this world. So if you want to know how to make spiritual advancement, instead of hoping that our intuition gives us the right idea, better we approach someone who's in knowledge, who tells us. If you don't know how to make bread, you only have a vague idea, better have someone show you who knows how to do it. It's not difficult to do it, but if you don't know, Don't rely on intuition. Much better, you just say, well, I don't know, could you show me? And then you show it, and you can do it. So similarly in spiritual life, we should find out what is the formula, get taught how to do that. And it may vary in different situations also. Just like the different kinds of bread, different kinds of flour. So, this pumpernickel bread is very different to the French white bread, croissant. Very different. They're both bread. So, even you might be expert in making pumpernickel, but you might have someone show you how to make croissant. So guidance is always needed. There's one very good essay you can read in that book, In the Science of Self-Realization. There's that book. Do you have copies of that here?
Yes.
Yeah, that there's a whole section on the necessity of accepting a spiritual master. So I would recommend reading that.